Hello, everybody. We are ready to start the next session about teaching. We have five great presentations. So maybe let's start with the first one. Let's invite Colin Randall from Duke University. And he is going to talk, give a presentation about continuous integration and teaching. So, yep.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming out this afternoon. I'm excited to talk about this, sort of get sort of feedback from what other people have maybe done or thought about, that kind of thing. So I'm going to give sort of a little bit of a case study about two courses that I've taught at Duke over the last sort of year, 2 years. This started with STAT 523, which was a statistical computing course that was part of our new master's program, an MSS, a Master's of Statistical Science. And that was 2 years ago. It was successful. The idea is we want to integrate computing in a sort of purposeful manner into our curriculum, sort of at all levels. It was something that was a little bit ad hoc to begin with, sort of people picked it up as they went along. So we've now started to offer this also as sort of a second, third year level elective course for our undergraduate students as well. And again, the idea is it's very much a fundamental computing course, much less about the statistics, much more about the computing, which is why I'm talking about it here at USAR. In general, these are smallish courses, so generally about 40 students, and it's very much a team-based course. So we divide the students up into sort of heterogeneous groups of four, and they work on almost everything in the class within those groups. Sort of bi-weekly, as in every other week, programming assignments, sort of open-ended data analysis, data manipulation, that kind of thing, and I'll speak to some of those in a little bit more detail. And then there's some individual assessment in terms of take-home midterms and a final project where they get to do something a little more open-ended of their choice. In terms of sort of what we want them to get out of this, there are three main learning objectives that we're hoping they take with them. The first is just we want to teach them R. R is sort of a unifying framework for our entire curriculum. That's something we're moving towards, and we want them to do that. So we want to prepare the students as best we can. So the idea is, yes, we want to teach them base R, but we want to teach them the wider R ecosystem. A lot of time that ends up being a lot of things sort of with the Hadleyverse just because everything works nicely together, and that's a great place to start. But giving them enough base that they can then go out and learn new things. They can implement stuff themselves, they can pick up a new package and run with it, that kind of thing. The second key prong is reproducible research, and this is hugely fundamental to everything we do, and this is not the sort of trivial reproducible research of write it in our markdown file. This is you need to do that and then be able to pass it off to somebody else who can run your code start to finish without a single issue. And that's the ideal. It's very, very hard in practice, but it's something that we try to introduce very early on, and it's something that's not just in this class. We're trying to introduce it again across the entire curriculum because we think it's very, very important. And in general, in these courses, that generally takes the form of R, Markdown, and Knitter, largely avoiding the task of having to teach them LaTeX at the same time. And in this particular course, we're starting to work on larger research projects that you're not going to sit there and wait 10 or 15 or even an hour, 10 or 15 minutes, an hour for the code to compile or run. So we also integrate things like Make as a way of doing larger reproducible research projects. The last thing is just software engineering and collaboration. We want them to write code. We want them to write good code. We want them to write code with other people, to read other people's code, to proofread, to check, that kind of thing. So we try to integrate a lot of sort of best practices in that sort of area. So that sort of is working on remote machines, using the shell, using Unix, Git, GitHub, that kind of thing. So those are sort of the three pillars. And notice that there's not anything that's inherently statistical among any of those three things. We do some statistical stuff along the way, but that's not the main point of the course. In terms of just infrastructure, we have good resources. So we have dedicated departmental server, high memory, high CPU. So we run an education licensed version of RStudio Pro. It's fantastic. I highly recommend it. And so that means every single student has their own individual account with resources that brings with them. But we have them all in the same place, so they're all sort of sharing the ecosystem at the same time. And that avoids the troubleshooting of individual people's laptops and software installs, that kind of thing, which is a massive, massive headache. The other really key thing is we use GitHub all the time from day one. It's hugely important. They have great support for educational things, so their educational repo kind of thing is fantastic. And so we use GitHub organizations and then teams within that organization to group the class together. So it's generally one GitHub organization per class. And then due to issues with things like FERPA, so protection of student information, we use private repos. So in general, the students' works is not publicly facing. If they want to make it public after the fact, that's up to them. But we don't force them to make that decision at the beginning. And this is something that we sort of learned, that treat repos as if they're cheap. So if you look at the GitHub pricing, or at least what it used to be, you see like 100 private repos is hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a month. We didn't have the budget for that, but GitHub has, again, very nice sort of education-based sort of give you whatever you want for free. And initially I was very tentative, so I'd ask for 10 repos and try to make do with that. There's no difference for them from asking for 10 or 100. So in this case, treat them as if they're disposable and use them as much as you can. So we've sort of worked down to sort of one private repo per team per assignment. So there's lots and lots of repos, but you get sort of the individual granularity, which is really nice. And then we share public things, so sort of general assignments or shared things between all the teams publicly, the website, that kind of thing. And then what I'm going to talk about today in more detail is then, because we're within the GitHub ecosystem, it makes it really easy to tie into these other tools. So in particular, continuous integration and testing. And so in particular, I use a service called Worker, and I'll talk about why I chose that particular thing in a little bit. Very brief sketch. So these are sort of the bi-weekly assignments. We have a 15-week course. So with the midterms, we sort of end up with about 6. And it goes from very simple things of just getting used to using GitHub, that kind of thing, to getting up with Hadoop and Spark, that kind of stuff. So it sort of runs the gamut. And I will highlight in particular homework 3 and 5 in a little bit more detail in terms of what's involved there. But if you're interested in any of these kind of things, I'm happy to talk about them. And all of the resources, again, are publicly available on the course's GitHub repository. So you can look at that kind of stuff. When we started, we had sort of this basic feedback cycle. So when I designed the course, it was going to be GitHub-based from the get-go. And it worked pretty well. And so we had this general sort of feedback cycles. The students do their work. They push the code to GitHub. I look at it. I comment on it. The TAs look at it, comment on it. Using issues and pull requests, it's great. The problem is that this feedback cycle is rate limited by my ability to grade things or look at things and the TA's ability to grade things and look at things. And that's very much a rate limiting step, so stuff slows down. It's fine, GitHub makes this really easy, but I'm the problem in this particular context. And so basically, we'd end up with things like this, where we want things to be reproducible, so they submit the RMD, they're not allowed to submit the compiled document. So they would submit it, I would try to run it and say, guess what, doesn't work, you use set working directory, which is the bane of my existence. I would say, you used an absolute path, that path doesn't exist in my directory structure, redo it. It would take them a day, they'd fix it, they'd send it back, oh, you used LME4, I didn't have that installed, the code didn't run. All of these things are easily fixable, and I could do that for them, but then that removes that learning process for the students to figure out. This stuff is trivial, but it's very, very important to do to be able to have your work be reproducible. So what you had was sort of one assignment would bleed into the next because just fixing the little things took a lot of time just because of that feedback cycle back and forth. So as of USAR last year, this is sort of what things looked like, and it was working, but it could be better. And so this is sort of what I had proposed, that we add an extra set of feedback cycles there that could be automated, that could give the simple kind of feedback back to the students, so that they could fix those kind of things, and then the more substantive kind of things, myself and the TAs could then look at and help them with that kind of thing, because that was much more important. Previously, I had the little cartoon of test all the things. That's not going to work. You can't test all the things. But you want to be sort of strategic, and you can test some of the things, and that can make a very dramatic improvement on sort of how the course flows, how the students feel about it, and the amount of work I had to do myself. And so, in general, again, the point of this is I'm not trying to write test cases that will grade all of the stuff they've done. That very much limits the scope of the kind of assignments I can give, and I'm not interested in giving those kind of assignments. So I'm much more interested in testing for the process and testing for sort of reproducibility in general, to see that sort of the basic stuff works, and then the fine details what I look at. So, in particular, if you're in this room and you developed an R package or you looked at GitHub, by far and away within the R community, it seems like Travis CI is the most popular option, and it is a fantastic service, and if I was writing an R package, that's what I would be using. There were a couple sort of small issues with it that I felt didn't match up well for sort of the pedagogical reasons for individual teaching, and in particular, sort of it's the idea that Travis CI is set up, and its R support is great, but it's very much package focused. So it's very good at sort of taking your code, running R command check, giving you output and telling you something about that. But for the assignments I'm having the students do, they're not as sort of packages. They're individual R scripts or RMD files or supplementing kind of things. So that was a little bit constricting. You can do other things with it, but it's not sort of what it is designed for. So you have to fight the process a little bit. Worker also has a Docker-based infrastructure, so people like Dirk have done the hard work of sort of putting together packages of R with a bunch of the packages you'd want there. So things like Rocker Hadleyverse gives me one place to install R and all of Hadley's packages in one place with sort of one line, as opposed to sort of having to explicitly do that with Travis. It was also free for private repos, so that was a big thing for us as well. I'm not sure that that's going to exist forever. They're a newer startup, so at some point they need to make money. But for the time being, it's been a very sort of useful thing, and I'll talk about this a little bit. Steps where you get sort of explicitly individual pieces that are a little bit easier for the students to look at and see what went wrong when they go through it. So one of the homework assignments in this comes from a guy named John Reiser who blogged. It was an R post about using R to analyze this joke from, I'm blanking on the comedian's name. The idea is La Quinta is Spanish for next to Denny's. And so the guy wanted to go out and say, look, we can look at Denny's website, we can look at La Quinta's website, we can scrape all the locations. Let's see how close these things actually are to each other in practice. And so in the class, this is a good exercise for web scraping. So Denny's API is an XML-based sort of API that's easy to work with. And then La Quinta doesn't have an API, but they have sort of a well-structured web page. So you can get both sides of the web data kind of scraping, pull it together, and we get the students to do some kind of data analysis like this. The main focus is on the scraping, but then they do something statistical in terms of sort of figuring out where these are and finding the nearest neighbor kind of stuff as you go through it. So this is the general assignment, and so what does this then look like in practice in terms of the GitHub and worker infrastructure? So they have a GitHub repo, we give them sort of stubs of files, and then we also tell them explicitly, these are the only files you're allowed to have in your repo. So we do not want them to have any sort of intermediary data files or anything else like that, it's very purist. And so in this case, various things were like grabbing the data off the website and then parsing it and then producing the actual data product. What you see down below here is the worker badge. If you've seen Travis, you've seen something like it before. I particularly like the worker one because it gives you sort of a history of the various pushes and whether they pass the checks or not. So that's kind of nice for the students to sort of see how they're doing over time, and also gives me as the instructor a quick way of checking those things as well. In terms of actual worker, when you go to it, it looks like almost any of these other sort of continuous integration services. So we have various builds, the which push it was on GitHub, and then we get information about whether it passed or not. And so in this case, the more interesting cases are to look when something failed. So we'll look at this particular commit. And so what we see is these are the individual steps that you can set up with worker. So we have some just sort of boilerplate that gets things going. In this case, the Hadleyverse Docker image was slightly out of date, so we updated the packages for them to make sure that that was fine. We then check a whitelist for allowed files to make sure that they're not sort of putting something there that shouldn't be or the data is cleaned up properly. And then we're just literally just running make to see if we can get to the final result. And so that's where they failed. And we can look then within that individual step to see the feedback of what happened. And so in this case, it's just one of their chunks within the RMD failed because in this case, they subsetted one of their data frames down to nothing, and so they can't join it with something else. So that pedagogically, I think, is super valuable because the students can see sort of individual level feedback in terms of what's going on, where it broke. If you've used things like Travis, you do get the same stuff, but it tends to be in this giant wall of text, and so particularly for newer students who are getting used to this kind of thing, this gives you a little bit more granularity that I find very valuable. So that was one of the compelling sort of things that I looked for in particular. So in terms of how we got this to work, this is the YML file that sort of defines what's going on, but the point is that these are very easy sort of infrastructure things to set up. So literally, we're updating this thing, so I'm just providing shell script commands essentially. Here, this is just running a script that I host on GitHub that checks the whitelist for files. Here, we're then just running make and making sure that at the end of that, we're producing the compiled homework file. All of these things, again, we get all of those checks with just a few lines of code. So again, it is an investment of time and energy, but it's not a huge one. And you can automate a lot of this stuff, and it gives, again, that extra level of feedback to the students. One other very quick thing, so there are limitations to this. So one of the other assignments in terms of this was we looked at New York City Open Data. There's a great parking ticket data set, about 2 or 3 gigabytes, several hundred million tickets that were issued over one financial year. And so our goal here is to take those parking tickets that have a police precinct and an address, geocode those using tax data from New York City as well, so that we get locations, and then within that do some kind of cluster that we can then try to recapitulate a map of the New York City police precincts and their boundaries using just those parking tickets. So it's cool. You get some geospatial kind of stuff, which I'm interested in. The problem is the data set is so large, I feel really bad that I'm not going to do something where I'm going to require a worker to download 3 gigabytes of data every single time my students commit. So in this case, then, it's a later assignment. We're relaxing some of these kind of sort of automatic tests. And so instead, what we use Worker for doing is we treat this like a Kaggle contest. So we compare the student's results and see who's doing the best job of predicting these police precincts boundaries. And we do this by basically calculating a score and then sending it to a third-party service that sort of hosts it for us, a key-value store. But in this case, again, we're not doing any explicit testing anymore. We're just using this as an automated thing that will then give this kind of score back to the students so they can see how they're doing in the overall sort of prediction aspect of the course. So it's one of these things that you don't have to just limit yourself to this testing idea. There's lots of other sort of automation things you can do with it. There's lots and lots of lessons learned from this. It's a really interesting thing. It's ongoing. There's lots of things that can still be improved, but I really strongly believe just for whatever you're doing, GitHub is the answer. And I don't mean GitHub necessarily by itself, but that GitHub, GitLab, any of those kind of tools, some kind of distributed version control where you have a nice front end to it is immensely valuable. And this kind of scripting automation kind of thing pays off immense dividends when you're working on these kind of things. It's really, really important. It's really, really useful. And things like ordering are very, very important. So how you present the stuff matters. And I've learned that through hard lessons over the last 2 years. I'll leave that there. If you're interested in any of these materials, so for the three times this course is run in its various forms, these link to that, and all of those web pages then also have a link to the GitHub repository for that particular course. So all those materials are there. Take a look. Talk to me later on if you have questions, that kind of thing. And this presentation is there along with last year's and everything else.
And we have 2 minutes for questions. So who's going to start? Yes, please.
So yes, basically we did, within each group there was a team, or sorry, within the course there were teams. Each team had their own private repository that was private to the other teams. I have played around with things where then once they've submitted the code, you then make it readable to another team so you can do sort of a code review type thing. Yeah, exactly. So you can then open it up later on, and there's really nice access level controls for teams within organizations now. So you can do lots and lots of good stuff with that. I'm not sure how much you need to do that. It's more the concern of copying code kind of things, but I'm not sure that's absolutely necessary.
Yes, please. Yep.
Everything. So we literally have people with no coding experience at all. So they've never seen a programming language ever. And then we also have people who basically came into the master's program after 10 years of professionally working as a software engineer. So it's a tough balance to get between it. In general, it's much more towards the left end of the scale of less experience than it is to the right. But that's part of why we try to set up heterogeneous groups. There's almost always somebody in the group who's done some kind of programming. And the idea then is that there's sort of peer instruction as part of it. But it is a challenge to sort of make things useful for everybody across the board.
Yes, please.
It happens pretty quickly, but it's not something that, it's a slow climb. So basically, they do it, they get frustrated early on, and so that's the point. The earlier homework assignments are much easier, but they're much more about getting them used to the workflow, getting them used to the process. But within sort of a month, you can get them very, very comfortable with it, and there will always be some students who get it immediately, and some who take months, but it does generally work, and that was one of the things I was very nervous about when we first started. Like, will they just totally revolt about this GitHub thing and just say no? And that has not been the case at all. They do accept it, and I'm very much interested in taking it into like the statistical classes as well now. I'm committed to that.
Okay, so last 2 questions. Yep, you are going to ask or? No? So last question, please.
Yes. So basically, they're graded at the team level. So for each assignment, I do grading. And it's something that, this is one of those issues that was problematic because when you want to have something like, if you submit code that does not run, you get a 0. When there's only 6 assignments, you can't do that. So usually what there would be is sort of a revision period of, I will grade it, I will then give you feedback, and I'll give you several days to now go back and fix those mistakes, and I'll give you some fraction of those points back. Thankfully, because these are sort of smaller, upper-level classes, the grades don't matter so much. And so I've, in general, the homework assignments are not very sort of useful in discriminating between the students. That's why we added these sort of individual assessments. That gives you a much better idea of the individual student's ability and how much they picked up. But because people are starting for so many different levels, it is tricky, to say the least.
So let's thank Colin again.